Please help me welcome our speaker tonight, Amber from the Optus Group of Northeast Philly.
Hi, everybody. I'm Amber Adams, alcoholic. Hi, everybody. Where the heck is Jack? He asked me to speak, and he's not here. I'm going to kick his butt. My pet peeve when they're not here. How about all that shoveling? Everybody make it through the snow okay? I didn't think I was going to get out of bed this morning. But it's good to be here. You guys made it out, your troopers, you know, coming in the snow in Quakertown. I have a sobriety date. It's August 23rd of 2009, the day I was separated from alcohol, the day my life began when, you know, I thought it was over. And I have a sponsor. Her name is Katie. She hands me my ego on a silver platter. Looks really pretty. I swallow and digest huge chunks of truth about myself. She's out of state. Sometimes I think if she was in state and I was looking at her. And I have the privilege and honor of sponsoring great women. Great women. I'll tell you. Many times I got to a point, you know, our book talks about I have to perfect and enlarge my spiritual life, the work and self-sacrifice for others. It's right in Bill's story, and that's my experience. Because if I don't get into this work and I eat, sleep, and crap AA in my moments where I just don't want to do anything, I will drink again. And I will affect everybody around me. Or I won't treat my alcoholism and I'll be an emotional basket case. And I'll be a prey to misery and depression. And, you know, it's just, I'll just, you know, get current with you a little bit. A few days ago, Thursday, I had to put down my cat. And it's just really been brutal. If any of you guys have pets and you had to put them down, totally rocked my world. I was just completely depleted. And I'm alcoholic, so when you have something so, it's just so big, to me it was very big. It's like any nook and cranny I have going wrong explodes into something bigger. It's like I put a spotlight on all the little stuff going on in my life that isn't quite right. And that's what happens. Can anybody relate to that? So the awareness is, after doing a little bit of work and continuing to do a little bit of a work, is when I get so emotional and I get so distraught, I have this voice that says, Amber, don't turn this into a self-imposed crisis. Don't do it, you know, because I can go that route. That's where I go. It's where my alcoholism takes me. And thank God for that still little voice. So just bear with me. It's no coincidence, you know, Jack just, you know, he asked me to speak on the date of, like, after all this stuff, Ann took the ride. She's scared to death to drive on the ice. She's a trooper, you know. It's the intimacy that Alcoholics Anonymous has just changed my life. It's absolutely amazing, you know, and I asked myself today and reexamined that first step. Am I really willing to go to any lengths? Do I know what it looks like to be willing to go to any lengths? Am I? In my gut and my soul, willing to go to any lengths for a spiritual experience, for victory over alcohol or crack cocaine or heroin or whatever your thing is. And because I was completely rocketed over the weekend, deflated, surrendered, I mean, you name it. And it's just, you know, beautiful language that we have. And, you know, tonight I'll just tell you a little bit of what I was like, what happened, and what I'm like now. I won't go into any really, you know, heavy war stories. I love Feed First. When this group started, I was 3 years sober, and it was over at Jerusalem. So it's a privilege. It's an honor to be here tonight speaking for you guys. It's, I mean, I grew up at this meeting, basically. And I was 3 years sober before. I remember somebody coming down, sitting with me, open up that big book, open up that magic man, and I was so consumed with myself, so full of my problems. I mean, our book talks about a deliberate manufacture of misery. Like, that was me. And show me this magic, and I wasn't hearing it. I just definitely wasn't hearing it. So I went out the door. I mean, relapse is probably the best thing that ever happened to me. But this meeting saved my life. These women that are here tonight in this meeting saved my life. AA is sacred. A home group is sacred. My home group, Octus, meets Wednesday night in Northeast Philly. We have Just Don't Drink, Jim. We have Big Book Thumper, Thelma. We have everything in between. It's in Philly. It's right off of Woodhaven Exit. Wednesday nights, they have meetings there all during the week. But Wednesday night at 8, it's a Big Book meeting. We break down that book, and we just, you know, it's exciting. And it's a great group. So I'll just, you know, honestly, guys, I mean, sometimes I hear, people, how we grow up and this and that. And I gotta be honest, I didn't have no Leave It to Beaver family. I mean, I love my mom. I love my dad. I have beautiful parents, but, you know, it wasn't easy. And if it's not easy, it doesn't make anything easier after that. So, you know, I just remember being, you know, really small, and I have active alcoholism on both sides of my family. My parents split early on. My mom, my mom and my dad are both soldiers, you know, and they divorced. And, you know, just crazy stuff happening. There was police early on, and, just a lot of, you know, unknowing what's chaos. And as far as God, I don't talk a lot about God at all. I believe it's really an experience, man. And when you see that walk with God, it's a blessing. But I really have no knowledge of God at that point, because I was in really no hurry to find him. I mean, just really bottom line, I'm never really in a hurry to find God. It just seems how alcoholism works. And, you know, my dad, just in and out of, you know, incarcerated, doing the best he can. And I'll tell you right now, my dad is in the VA in Maryland. And there's some people in this room that have been on the journey with me of trying to help my dad in North Philly and try to help him and save him. And he's sober today. He's 9 freaking months sober. Uh-huh. It's a miracle. I love my dad. He's the strongest man I know. And it's a blessing. But I will tell you, you know, 6.5 years sober, I didn't master that resentment with my dad until 2 years ago. And that's the honest to God truth. Was not able to master that. I had to do some work. Anything where it keeps on coming up, I have to take a look at. Because resentment's the number one offender. It destroys people like me. It's destroyed me sober, and it's destroyed me drunk. So, and now I'm free. So I'm telling you, if you got anything tonight, any resentments at your gut, your feeling, they can be mastered, and you can walk free, you know. And, so, you know, and early on, I have a little brother, and it was just chaos and, you know, all that stuff. Does that really make me alcoholic? No. Does it make it any easier on me? No. But see, the problem is, I don't know so much about the guys, but I know a lot about the women. I work with a lot of women, always have, is that my upbringing, what happens to me, I wear it like a badge of honor. Like a badge of honor. I'm so attached to it. And what happens is I play this victim role. I know that's kind of self-helpish. I'm going to pull that card. You know, I just play this victim role, and I wonder why I'm so upset, or I'm so disturbed, or I'm so heavy in collision. And I just, I'm not light, you know, and that kind of stuff. That's why we found God, you know, being all powerful, you know, and that relationship seemed to fix everything else. You know, Emmett Fox, a lot of our book comes from him. He says, when your spirit is right, details take care of themselves. So get your heart right. Any detail, any crap you have going on kind of fixes itself. It's been my experience, and I see it in others. And so it really wasn't easy. But I will tell you, looking back in hindsight, I played sports. I don't know if anybody played sports in here. That's pretty much was my saving grace. Yeah, I mean, it doesn't even have to be a sport if you had a hobby. I played sports. I played softball. You know, and I can see when our book says our third step is so much more than a decision. I had to quit playing God. And I can even see, you know, how I used to just was so exerted myself all the time with sports. If I can't be the best, F it, I'm not doing it at all. It's like that kind of mentality was so extreme. The book says I'm an extreme example of self-will run riot. And the danger is I don't usually think I am. So I can pinpoint that stuff all the way back then. I can see, you know, our book talks about fear. It's an evil and corroding thread. I had some old ideas last week hit me that are just evil and corroding, that are just, I'm looking at, that are getting me free, that I didn't know how deep it was. And So I played sports and I excelled. I was really good. Thank God, you know, because that was my way out. But, you know, the actor's going to direct. I mean, I'm in softball and I'm yelling at my teammates, you know, telling them to do the right thing, telling them my coach, he needs to do a better job. You know, I can do better. And, you know, it's, you know, it's just how I ran. You know, I just run on self. You know, you can't tell me to pray to God I don't believe in. You can't tell me to pray to God or this is what it looks like or get on my knees and do this. You need to show me how Amber shows up when she's running on self. What do I look like? What do I do when I'm running on self? What kind of decisions do I make? How do I act with you when I'm running on self? When I have no power in my life, I'm just a completely different person. I'm tight. I'm in collision. Like, you can't even talk to me. It's, I already know what you're going to say. I already have the answers. And, you know, it's, I mean, looking back, I can just see now, I mean, being armed with the facts, guys, even if you go, you sit with somebody tonight or you sit with somebody next week and you want to do the steps, don't want to do the steps. If you're alcoholic and you get armed with the facts about you, not your friend, not your sponsor, you, I'm telling you, what it did for me, it just opened the gate. It opened everything, you know. Just a tiny bit of information. So I was good, and I guess, you know, it's like Bill's story. I love it. He fancied himself a leader. You know, I'm like, I can identify with that. I'm not a stockbroker, but I fancy myself a leader, you know. And then, you know, my progression, just of alcoholism, you know, my first drink was at 14. I'm not one of those, you know, girls that was, you know, drinking and smoking at 4 or 5, you know, it's, that just wasn't the role. I had a fantastic mom, my brother. I'm self-reliant. I do that pretty good until it doesn't work anymore. So that's what I was doing. Just trying to hold the family together, you know, and I remember 14. I hung with my brother. He drank. It was like the, it was just like a transformation. If you think back to when you really got stepped over to the curb on that other side, and friends of ours, we got, you know, Old English, 40 ounces alcohol. It's a lot. I mean, I think back, I'm like, oh my God, it was so much beer. And, that night we had like 5 or 6 of us. And prior to then, guys, you know, I don't remember the effects that alcohol had on me sips. I mean, I just came from a family that drinks. I grew up in Allegiant. My grandmother was a bartender. I remember being this big, and my only dream was to sit on the bar with everybody and smoke and laugh. That was like my life's goal. And the problem was, it still was my life goal at like 14, 15, 18. Like, that was my... It didn't really get bigger than that. So we're on Hillside Avenue... In Satterton, you know, it looks a lot different, you know, now than it was before, but there was just a group of us and we all had 40 ounces. And I'll tell you, man, I just remember really the effect that it had on me. You know, up till then, it was like just a blur and it was just a, you know, I just felt like it was a fight all the time. It was just a fight to be right. I mean, the collision I had in my head, it was just a struggle. Just a struggle, if you guys can, you know, identify with that. Maybe it doesn't seem like it on the outside, you know, but inside, it was just a struggle. And that's all I can really, you know, put words to. And I drank this 40 ounce and, man, it was like I was almost halfway, 3/4 down that bottle. And I came alive. You know, Bill Wilson calls it the magic elixir. Totally was magic for me. It was just unbelievable what alcohol, you know, did for me. You know, prior to that, it's, you know, it's, and I remember coming into AA, the first time, and I was just so young. I'm, you know, 19-year-old kid, and I'm coming to AA, and I can't identify with the 700 DUIs and losing everything because I didn't have anything to lose to begin with. And guys, you don't have to identify what alcohol does to you, just what it does for you, you know? And what it did for me was it got me alive. I mean, I just felt light. I felt free. It's like all the collision, my home life, everything, it just like stopped. You know, I was just totally locked into that moment. It's a beautiful thing. It's very powerful. Trouble is, I'm alcoholic. It got progressively worse, you know? And, you know, that spirit versus spirit thing Carl Jung talks about. Spirit of alcohol, his freaking store is called Wine and Spirits. You know, spirit of AA. You know, you got to find God. I don't use higher power. I just say God, you know, my creator. And I'll tell you guys, that night I was a free little girl. I was free. You know, it was just amazing. So up till then, you know, that effect that it has on me, I just, you know, that effect was so strong. My sports, I mean, everything. I started smoking cigarettes. The progression, you can see it. We get progressively worse, never better. If you're alcoholic, even look at not even just your drinking, but your thinking, right? Because that's what really the stuff is about. Just got progressively worse. I was just, you know, just a train wreck. I started hanging on the other side of the corner. We moved to this other school district, North Penn School District. I went from a class, Libby knows, from real small to a class quadruple of, you know, what it was. I was just scared to death, you know, and I, you know, that fear, I was just scared, just a normal fear. The book, especially the 12 and 12, beautiful book. Go through that big book first, then go dive into that book. Beautiful. Talks about fear being a self-centered fear. I create it. Hence, you know, I set the ball rolling. It's a completely different fear, man. I set the ball. I mean, I create all my fear. It's always something I'm doing or not doing. You can think right here tonight, your first fear. It's probably something you're doing or you're not doing. If you wouldn't have done that or maybe did this, you wouldn't have the fear. And, I mean, I look back on it now. It was tough. You know, like I said, but every chance I got, I drank. I pretty much drank on the weekends. I'm underage. I started smoking. I started standing on the other corner. I went to school, excited to play softball, athlete, really ready to play for them, play softball, play soccer. And, you know, that just, it goes on the back burner, you know. It's stuff we sacrifice. You know, only an alcoholic. Only alcoholics, when something doesn't go my way or I need something better, I hurt myself. Oh, I don't like them. I'm not going to that meeting. I hurt myself. I can't handle them. I don't like what they have to say. I hurt myself. You know, I take a shot at myself and I don't even see that I'm doing it. So, but this alcohol, it's doing something for me that nothing else ever did, you know, and I'm that girl, guys. You know, as soon as I hit 16, 17, 18, in and out of the institutions. You know, Horsham Clinic, I'm in there. First time I'm in there, I have a little boyfriend. Second time I'm in there, I have a little girlfriend. I'm in there 3 days later, you know, I have something going on. I've organized a group. You know, this is just what I do. Katie jokes with me. She says, Amber, you can go on a retreat. It has nothing to do with AA, and you will be leading that by Sunday. It's, you know, we're so self-centered. You know, the actor's going to direct. I'm going to be in that position, and I'm going to do it well. I might do it well for a little bit, but then it's going to crash and burn. It always does. And so that whole thing started. I mean, when our book talks about, you know, fear ought to be classed with stealing. I mean, I robbed my mom so much time. I'm a basket case. I'm in an eating disorder. This alcoholism is just on me. You know, I have all this fear. And really the root of that is just I can't get outside of myself long enough to ask for help. You know, I'm going in these rehabs early on. I'm drinking on the weekends. I'm getting out of rehab, trying to find alcohol. I'm sneaky. I'm a liar, cheating, a thief. I mean, what we do to our parents. It's my mom, my poor mom, my grandmother, my matriarch, and my brother. What role was I playing for my brother? We affect so many people. But see, the thing is, my perception is like a straw. I can't see anything else. My perception is so limited. Right in the midst of my grips and my drinking and my alcoholism, my perception is like a straw. I can't possibly fathom I'm affecting everybody. You know, it's kind of like you ever sponsor somebody that says, I'm not really like that. I'm a people pleaser. Would you line up all the people that you're pleasing? Could we see them? Because, I mean, I used to see that all the time. But then line them up, man. It's, you know, it's funny. Only in Alcoholics Anonymous. Man, I'm just so full of myself, so consumed with myself. And alcohol is becoming pretty important. You know, it's becoming a necessity. It's what it does for me is so much, and I'm underage, and you know, when you're drinking and doing other things underage, it's like you do what you have to do to get alcohol, and it's talk about obsession. You know, Silkworth talks about that obsession to drink. You know, and then when I start drinking, you know, I can be out on the weekends and I want a 40 ounce and I would start and I have an allergy to alcohol. I'd want to stop, or I'm only going to have one 40 ounce. That's a lot of beer, one. But I'm alcoholic. I'm different from Molly over there. She can drink her 140 and put it down and have a good time. I drink one. I set off a craving and I need to drink more. Then all of a sudden it's late at night. You know, I'm 16 years old and my mom's wondering why I'm coming in at 3 o'clock in the morning. I'm waking her up. Because I set off a craving. I'm different. I had to find that about myself. I could give it to you. At that age, I would say I'm a little screwed up. I would admit that. My thinking isn't that great. My behavior isn't that great. So I could get you on the mental side of things. I could understand that. But our book in Silkworth specifically gets into the allergy. You know, the allergy is what happens when I drink, and that's what makes me alcoholic. You know, I take a drink. Right? Then the second one takes the first one. You know, what about anybody trying to control and enjoy their drinking? You know, that's when really, I mean, I remember being 18 years old and just thinking just in the grips of, I wish I could just drink right. I'm in these underage bars and I'm going with a group of friends I met in rehab and we get out and we go to this bar, you know, and I get there, I'm excited. I could feel it. I could just feel the tension before that first drink is just life is on me, right? It's just life is on me. And, you know, it's, and I just can't handle it. I just can't get, you know, I can't get it together, you know, I can't get it together. And so I take a drink and I'm at this bar and I'm, you know, I'm 18 years old and I only want to have a couple shots and I only want to have a beer and I don't want to do anything else. And then I physically can't. And I remember going in, I'm just out of rehab, Amber. This is the plan. Okay. You can't even tell me something spiritual is going to solve my human problem. I can't fathom that at 19 years old. I can't believe God, something bigger than me, is going to solve my human problems. I'm too self-reliant. You got to come to the back door with something else. I just can't do it. And, so I'm going in these rehabs and I can't even put two and two together. I'm just looking for, you know, somebody to save me, somebody to help me, and parent, you're a child, and all this stuff from all good and well-mean people, which would work for somebody that's non-alcoholic. You know, I was one of those people. I joined a 12-step program and didn't really kind of do the 12 steps. They were all just still theory on that freaking wall, you know? So I'm doing this stint. I'm in and out of rehab and I'm going to this bar and, you know, I'm 18 and I can just feel the animosity. And I remember looking over and seeing my friends and they're having fun. They have a couple shots and then they go and they're all older than me. And I'm like, where's everybody going? I don't understand, you know, and it did something different for me than it did for them. You know, Bill says, ominous warning, I failed to heed. You know, I had so many warnings, guys, so many warnings. Family, you know, early on, trying to control my drinking at 18, trying to make the right about, you know, and do things, and then wake up sober, and I'm starting to be shaky, and, you know, I'm not going to go to the bar. I'm actually going to get a job, try to do something. A good, solid decision for me, for somebody like me, an alcoholic, does not last very long at all. It doesn't last very long, you know. Lack of power is my dilemma, not lack of knowledge. If you're alcoholic, there's nothing, you don't know what you should be doing. That's why our book talks about a fear prayer, a tiny little fear prayer. Ask God how you think he would have you be. You already know that. It's just doing a little work to get out of that. And just in the insanity of it. And it was just horrible. I remember being 18. I'm like, I can't even hang out with my friends. I can't even do it right. I can't even drink right. You know, they're starting to live on their own. All my friends are going to college. And here's me. I'm just not going anywhere. So the last eating or rehab place I was at, I was just institutionalized, you know, constantly left and right. I started hurting myself. I'm just, you know, my poor mom. I put her through so much. You know, that's why when I get, you know, when you get a couple crazies, you're sponsoring a couple crazies, right, Ann? It's like, I know. they're extra special. I've been there. Like, I know, you know, and it's as Women in Alcoholics Anonymous, it's like we're able to show some facts, and they have to face them, and it's not easy, and it's not pretty, but it's free. You know, it's really freeing, and that's the intimate relationship that we have. When my first sponsor, Lily, was the first intimate relationship I ever had in my life. She taught me spirituality. We read that big book. There was magic in there, and I felt connected to something that I never had been before. See, guys, I can't just leave AA and go to church. I can't because I got down to causes and conditions. That's why I can't. I can add it on to everything that I'm doing on top of my AA, but I need another alcoholic. I need to feel that strength that comes from another drunk, you know, and it's amazing. So, I go into my last stint at rehab. I go into, then they threw me in the loony bin for a little while, you know, I go in there and I get comfortable, guys. That's just what I do. I get comfortable. You know, I get comfortable doing the Thorazine shuffle, you know, and then I look at my book, you know, and I'm not knocking medication, you know, but prey to misery and depression, can't control my emotional nature, sounds like Lexapro and Xanax, to be honest with you, you know, and it's, I remember being diagnosed everything under the sun, on every freaking medication possible, everything, and I will tell you guys, it has been almost a decade since I've been on anything. You know, it's and I'm not knocking meds at all, not at all. All I'm saying is if this and this is still going on and you haven't taken the 12 steps or maybe cleaned up some wreckage, if your prayers aren't being answered, take a look at who you've not forgiven. It's a quote by Emmett Fox. Totally got in action with that about just a little while ago and a year ago, just absolutely changed my life. But it says that language for a reason. You just got to get somebody to sit down with you and explain it to you. A lot of fancy words that, you know, I just don't know what they are, but with somebody who's armed with the facts and they approach you because a problem has been solved in them, it's magic. If you haven't experienced that yet, you're missing out. So I get out of rehab. Oh, my counselor at rehab, this guy was great. I remember going up to him and I remember saying, Glenn, am I alcoholic? You know, I'm really young. Are you sure? And I remember just his look on his face was just, it could have been more convincing. Yeah, Amber, you're definitely, when you get out of here and, see guys, cause I was honest with this man. I was honest with him. There's times in AA I've been honest, but I haven't been willing. And there's times I've been willing, but I wasn't 100% honest. And that's why that book on 73 talks about fearlessness, humility, honesty. In a sense, this process requires to recover from that mental obsession, man, to be free, to walk free. And I was honest with him. He said, you know what, Amber, you belong in AA. You're an alcoholic. And I got out, and he said, go to this meeting, the Lansdale Clubhouse, sacred place. And I remember going there on a Friday night, and he told me to go there because there was a lot of young people there. A lot of young people tonight, man. It's just awesome. A lot of young people there. And I remember I pulled up. I didn't get sober, no recovery house, nothing like that. I was getting evicted. My electric was shut off. It was not good on paper. And I went. I still had my car. I went to this meeting, and I remember pulling up scared to death. So intimidating. Scared to death. And these women, I mean, you can spot a newcomer a mile away. I was just walking up, looking at my feet, surprised I didn't trip, and they just pulled me right in. You know, and that's what we do. I always thought they had to come to me. And the book is saying the complete opposite. When I'm sick, I'm scared to death. You're the confident one. You have a solution. You're practicing it. You come and save me. And that's what these women did. And they brought me into this meeting. And I remember I sat in and it was packed. It was so packed. And I just felt at home, guys. I really did. It was something special. It was magic. I just really felt at home. And I got a sponsor, a couple sponsors. Anybody sponsor hop? You know, I just, I got a couple sponsors. And the thing is, guys, I really, that promise right at the top of our third step on 63, it says, your God, not my God, your God will provide you exactly what you need. You got to do two things. You got to stick close and perform his work well, not half-assed. alcoholic by nature. I'm always going to see that glass half empty. It's my nature. It's how I'm going to wake up. It's why I need to do a little spiritual work. And see, the thing is, I'm getting my 30-day chip. I'm getting my 60-day chip. I'm getting my 90-day chip. I'm chairing meetings. I'm meeting people. I got my sponsor. But I'm not transformed. I'm the same girl that walked in. I do not have a thought transformation. I memorized my third step prayer, one of the most beautiful prayers I think we have. But the problem is, I made a decision 47 times a day to turn my will and my life over the care of God. And that will in life goes on a fourth step. That's what I turn over. And I never really got into the work. You know, I just, those later steps, that transformation, when I'm tempted by alcohol, I wasn't able to recoil, you know, tempted by anything. Anything can be a subtle foe, sex, money, whatever the case may be. So, but I'm feeling good off the fellowship. Fellowship of AA is powerful. It's beautiful. It's amazing. I mean, the women I sponsor teach me about fellowship. I'm not really a fellowship kind of person. I'm an old lady at heart. I'd rather do my meetings, my book studies, my step work, and, you know, and be in bed. But, and they teach me. And so it's a beautiful thing to watch. And, then it's just, that's all I did, and I would gain all these fancy titles, and I'm suffering from alcoholism. So although I may not be drinking, I'm getting progressively worse mentally. My spirit's drying out. I mean, I can't do for God. You know, it's easy to say a prayer, but faith without works is dead. I ordered my vodka on the rocks, my Sambuca, having faith in God, having some kind of belief, but I didn't do for God. You know, our book says he matches calamity with serenity. Well, that's what that means to me. That means when I'm going through a storm, I can have some peace of mind and I can have some tools to get through it and not take the whole world down with me and come out with some awareness and something to give to somebody. And I was just getting worse, guys. And one of the biggest things was I really abandoned my family. You know, and it just always chokes me up is because I was living in the fellowship of AA. I went to so many meetings, and meetings are great. But if you don't take the program, you don't take the 12 steps that are outlined in that big book, you hurt people because you haven't changed. I was short-tempered, running on self-will. This is what Amber looks like, untreated, running on self. Let me get to that second meeting today. Let me look for that third meeting. I'll look for a job. I put in 20 applications. Let me get to my meeting. Oh, I'm sharing that meeting. No, Mom, I can't come over for dinner. I got to get to that meeting. No, Grandma, I can't really help you. I'm busy over here with AA. I mean, that's how I show up when I'm running on self. Just specifically with that, not treating my alcoholism. You know, I'm just snapping out. I'm short-tempered. I'm depressed. I'm just like all over the place, tempted by alcohol, you know, just left and right. And I remember I got this job. I'm a dog groomer, you know, and I own my business today through Men in AA that helped me. And this is way back when, and I get this job and I'm working. I had to let everybody know that I was alcoholic so they don't step on my toes. You know, I'm the alcoholic here. Watch out for me. You know how we are. We got to let everybody know, or nobody at all. But I was pretty, that third step, man, really a producer of confusion rather than harmony. I'm telling them I don't drink. I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I go to meetings, but yet I just have this behavior producing a lot of confusion. Well, Amber, you go to AA, but don't you guys read? Shouldn't you be happier? Shouldn't you be showing up to your job on time? Shouldn't you kind of be helping people out? So I give AA a poor name, and, you know, it's constantly growing and learning, you know. So my boss says to me one night, she says, Amber, we're going to go out to a club downtown. You want to go? I said, sure, I'll be the designated driver. And we get to this club, and I run into some old friends. And this friend is at the bar, and I am, 3 years sober. And she yells to me, Amber, what do you want to drink? And I yell back to her, what did I say? Rum and Coke. Just like that. No mental defense, guys. And that's... no mental defense at all. You know, where am I getting my ease and comfort? Because if you're an alcoholic, you'll eventually need it from a drink. Suddenly happens suddenly. And I'll tell you, I had 3 drinks that night. It was one of the best nights I ever had in my life. Because up to that point, I just could not. It was the same feeling, but worse. I just could not do life. Everybody, you guys were happy. You're getting your lives together, and it was not me. It wasn't me. I had plenty of people help. I had freaking big books at every meeting I went to. There it sat. There it sat. Never, never did I open that book. And so that night was one of the best nights. It saved me. I mean, I don't know if any of you guys get to the point where you get deep dark and you think about suicide, but I was heading there. So them couple drinks really got me alive. Trouble is now, you know, I'm an alcoholic, so I get progressively worse. So the first night I'm in this little fancy club downtown Philly. Within a year and a half, guys, I'm coming up from North Philly, you know, saying I'm never going to do that again. I was almost raped again, shot. They stole this, hurt. I can't do that. You know, and page 24 of our book explains that very well, that I'm going to do that again. That's step one. You're going to drink again. You're going to drink, is what that told me, is that I have no mental defense. It's not the rehabs, the guidance, the teachers, the good parents, the this, the that. It's none of that is sufficient enough to keep me away from a drink. None of that is sufficient enough. No amount of willpower, choice, none of that is sufficient for a girl like me. I have it all. I have the paperwork. It's all on paper. You would think that would be enough. You know, and if it was, I wouldn't be here tonight. You know, but I'm an alcoholic. I am, you know, so then I'm coming up and things are getting bad. And our book talks about incomprehensible demoralization. And I don't know about the guys, but, you know, a lot of women, we go through some stuff, you know, really the things we do for a drink, the things we do to find ease and comfort, things we do to just find, feel closeness to some creator. And it could be the creator in you, you know, but, that's where I was heading. Just couldn't keep a, you know, relationship, job. I was just a basket case. So I remember the first time coming back to AA, I remember coming right to this meeting. This is, let's see, I'm 6 and a half, almost 7. So this got to be 8 years ago. After a run, I come right up here to two women that I love dearly. Followed me back to my place. I was getting evicted too. I had a brand new freaking bottle of Sambuca right in my cabinet, a bottle of vodka. As soon as I got in, got any liquor in here? I'm like, couldn't even answer. She's right in my cabinet, pouring it out, you know, and sat down and talked with me, you know, and really talked with me. I said, I think sometimes today we get so mechanical with 1, 2, and 3 and 1, 2, and 3 and we just miss the whole depth and weight, the beginning connection, you know, when Abby talked to Bill, when Bill talked to Bob, and just the power, the intimacy that happens. And they just really talked to me. You'd think after that I'd be done drinking, but I wasn't. But they plant seeds. And that's the beautiful thing with AA, is I can't, you know, you plant seeds. I'm responsible. I'm responsible to tell you the truth, show you a prayer. Not, there ain't one meeting I don't go to where I just hear one woman share, and maybe I'm not supposed to be her sponsor, but if I listen to her share, maybe she's scared to death, and maybe she could use a fear prayer. Maybe she could use a resentment prayer. Maybe she's clinging to stuff she can't let go. Maybe she just needs to do a little work and just conversate, you know. It's when I talk to another alcoholic, man, about that book and about something, some action, it's just, it's magic. It never gets old. Just never gets old. Meetings get old. People get old. But that book doesn't get old. I get old. My perception gets old. My ideas get old. My experiences get old. That's why I need more, you know. And, so I come back, you think that'd be the last, but I don't. I go back out, and guys, this is me. This is the insanity. I swore I had a little calendar at home. I've had my calendar. I would come home, and I would look on the date, and I count out 30 days, and then I make a little asterisk, because that would be my 30 days. And then I drink, and I F it up, and I'd scratch it out, and I said, okay, I'm really going to do this time. And then I'm going to get, you know, 60 days, and I count it out. And I'll tell you guys, there was a middle part of that relapse, a middle part. I remember being at my bar, became a daily drinker. I mean, I woke up detoxing every single day. I mean, the moment I found a morning drink, I thought the freaking clouds parted. You know, it was just unbelievable. The embarrassment. I will honestly tell you what pretty much brought me back to Alcoholics Anonymous was embarrassment more than anything else. I was just embarrassed of myself. I really, my sex conduct, what I looked like, my shaking. I mean, I just remember being at my bar. It's on a Sunday morning waiting for it to open. And I go in and I remember sitting there and I was so afraid to just grab my wine because I would just shake constantly. I was so embarrassed. I remember looking tense, you know, at everybody right at that right moment where they just look away and went and look at me so I could just take my glass and drink my wine and just calm my nerves. I remember looking out that window, man, on a sunny day, thinking it'd be nice to mow a lawn if I had one, kind of do life. And I just felt trapped, just like handcuffed to booze. I just felt so trapped. And then there was a point where I thought I was going to die a drunk, to be honest with you. I thought I was really going to die a drunk. Like, I really didn't think, I was in the pit of my soul that I could not escape this. Could not escape the drink in this life. The abnormal becomes normal. You know, even in the beginning when your first sponsor or you're sponsoring somebody new, if they don't get it, it's because they still can't differentiate the true from the false. What's real and what's not real. That takes time. Do some work. Still do some work, but it takes time to just really see life and feel it for what it is. Every time I'd see life coming at me and it was just coming for me and I couldn't do it. I couldn't get it together. And I remember feeling that. I remember running to AAs everywhere. You guys are freaking everywhere. That's why I thank God I freaking grew up in AA. I would run into you guys everywhere at the Wawa, the Walmart, you know, wherever. Hey, Amber, how you doing? I'm okay. You know, go to meetings, go straight to the bar. I remember my friend, I said, I'll meet you at the bar. And I remember saying to her, Jen, she's like, where are you? I said, I was just at an AA meeting. She's like, how can you drink after an AA meeting? Like, isn't that what you're not supposed to do? I'm like, yeah, it's okay. I'm almost there. Just how we just, you know, we just brush it off, you know. It just, sobriety was so far, man. It just felt so far. It felt unreachable. It felt like I definitely neatly evaded, you know, what our second step talks about. Just couldn't do it so far. So the day came where I came back here again, a sacred place, and I got my sponsor. Amazing, nothing in common, you know, just amazing little woman, little hippie about this big. No, I mean, I'm like, how is she going to help me? And she's just saved my life. We got into work. See, the thing is, what she did is was so intimate. I never had an experience with this before. She came kind of through the back door with me, and we talked about emotions and decision making. And we got into this work, and I could put life to those words. I could put life to it. If you don't understand it, you got to understand it. You know, the book talks about the desperation of a drowning man. So, and it's my job to be awake enough, I guess, for the most part, to see when you're that desperate, just a small window of time where you're going to do a little bit of work, take a little bit of action. And Lily just knew, man. She just knew. It's like that magic that came out of that book was unbelievable. And I got into sponsoring early on, you know, very early on. I think I was like 65 days sober when I first sat and did my first, you know, fifth step with a girl, with my sheets, opened that book. I was thrilled. It's the first time I felt magic. It's the first time I felt love and compassion, all this stuff you talked about. I felt responsible for another human being. Page 20 of our book says, my very life depends on a constant thought of others and how I can help meet their needs. I felt that, and I thank God for my foundation. You know, them stones were properly in place. And they should be in place because at 3 years, I hate AA. I'm ego-driven. I'd rather go drive 5 hours and speak than come in, be a part of a home group. You know, it's I become that girl on page 73, living a double life. You know, then I, you know, run on sprees. And what do they look like? Mental sprees? You ever sit and judge somebody? You could be judging me right now. You know, sprees, whatever the case may be, you know, and I was so tough. Oh my God. Great women. I mean, God put these, I'm a big book thumper. I always will. And God put these big book women in my life, man, and just told me the truth and, you know, showed me facts and I faced them and just constantly grew. And guys, and even in my deepest, darkest times, relationship breakup, whatever the case may be, just sometimes I couldn't even feel close to my God, but there's one thing I did do, and I sat with you, and I sat with her, you know, and I just, I worked with others, you know, I just always did, it's just in my blood. Oh, we stayed in the book. There was times I'm saying these prayers, I'm saying these sex prayers and telling her she needs to say them, you know, and little did I know that I needed to hear me say that so I could work on them, you know, and just really doing some inventory. It was just amazing, you know. It's for my entire life, I always, like, you know, talked the language of my part and stuff and this and that, and I really got to see, you know, as my makeup, I'm an alcoholic. You know, my makeup is, I lost the right to criticize any kind of meat. I lost that right on page 67 when I did an inventory. You know, it's, I look at myself today, am I really avoiding retaliation and argument? I mean, the first thing I remember Carrie, my old sponsor, one of the biggest things she showed me is that I'd rather be right than happy. I want my parents to parent me as an adult. Like, she hit me with some stuff. I couldn't believe it. You know, and then I'll tell you, you know, it's 5 years came. And, you know, it's my boss. It was just, I gotta tell you this story real quick. It's unbelievable. I had a friend of mine from Philly, Ricky, come up. We were doing a big book study in Doylestown. And he came to me and he said, Amber, can you help this guy out? He's up here. I'm loaded with guys. Can you work with him? He's, you know, he really needs help. And he was like, you know, 68 and a great guy. And prior to that, this is what happened to me. This is what happened to me at, you know, it's just the insanity. I had my job and my boss was retiring and I was in just in constant collision. You ever have somebody you just can't get out of collision with and you're praying for him and you're doing this and doing that and you just can't. And you don't want to hear another freaking big book quote or spiritual blah. You're in constant collision. And I came to a point and it was my surrender where I just completely turned away from it. Completely turned away from this problem. And I just had this trust that you guys taught me from very early on. See, that foundation, that arch that was made, where which I would pass a free woman, that isn't just in the beginning, guys. I sponsor crap load of women from 8 years to 12 years, 14, 15 years, middle comers needing to do work, passing through that arch, walking through free women after doing a little bit of work, going on to sponsor others. It's amazing. And I had this collision and I could not let it go. And it was my work. It was my paycheck. You know, it was how I could pay bills. And I remember waking up and I'm just like, I just couldn't do it. I had it. I didn't have it in me. The fight was over. I'd ceased fighting everything and anyone. This specific, like, I didn't have it in me to fight. And I had this feeling that it was just going to be okay. It was just calm. I didn't create no crisis like my usual. I was just calm, and I went to this meeting, and this, he hooked me up with this guy. We were doing some amazing work together, amazing work, beautiful inventory. And this man, it's, you know, became my investor for my business. He was a investor kind of guy. We were talking one time after step work, and I said, hey, can I run something by you? And he helped me with some stuff, and then I got this work together, and I had met another guy, a business guy in AA. It's unbelievable what happens in Alcoholics Anonymous. And the day came where I sat down with my boss and I handed her a check and I bought that business from her, you know, that I worked hard for. I've been a groomer since I was 18 years old. You know, it's a, you know, I tried school. I mean, I have friends in AA doing the school thing and I sponsor women going to school. And I'm like, have at it, man. I am just a terrible student. I'm just tired. I mean, I can't sit. I'm just tired. I can't get good grades. I can't study. I'm not wired that way. And I have this business and it's absolutely amazing. And the reason I talk about it from the podium is because, you know, I don't get brownie points for doing what I'm supposed to do. You know, there's a few simple things in AA that I need to do. And the outcome, there's beautiful things that happen. You know, I sponsor women where they get their kids back. They get their kids back. They get good jobs. You know, it's or, you know, they relapse and they come back and they're just so gifted and they start sponsoring women early on. It's unbelievable how God uses them. You know, it's, you know, or you fall off and you come back, you know, even stronger and more open and more willing. You know, there's so much experience to be had in AA. And I remember about a year and a half ago, I called my sponsor now, Katie. She's out of Texas. And I called my buddy in Florida and, you know, I told him I was just so full of self and just, you know, going. And I called him and I said, Pete, you know, I need a woman. I need a woman. I said, listen, I work with a lot of girls. I got this business going on. This may be my ego, but I don't even care. I just need help. I need a strong woman. And he gave me, you know, my sponsor's number, and we hooked up right away. And I can't believe I didn't say F tonight, because her favorite word is F. And it was really good, really good. No swearing. Save that for another intimate situation. But, you know, what she had, you know, she had me really look at that, just evaluate some steps, you guys, and that's all it is, me re-examine some steps, you know, re-examine that third step, you know, what I'm really doing in that, you know, write some inventory. A business that doesn't take regular inventory goes broke, so you need to put pen to paper. It's, I need to see where I'm to blame. I got to see, my problem is I can show up pretty good. But when going gets tough, am I able to stop and see that from an entirely different angle? That's why I believe in sponsorship. Sponsorship and having a women you can 10-step with. It's 10-step with your sponsees. You know, I remember the first time I did that. I mean, I swallowed my pride, my ego. It was exactly what I needed. You know, it's just to really do that. And I got to work with her, and it was just flatline my ego, man. I mean, just amazing. And, you know, it was just a little while ago, I had a friend up, you know, he was speaking, and it was just really unbelievable. And I was taking a look at my 9-step. Charlie, my sponsor's husband, he always talks about, you know, there's anything, though, you got any, you know, collision disturbance, take a look at your 9-step. We all could clean up some stuff. I bet you there's everybody in this room tonight has at least one or two people you could just sit with. And you know what? I was wrong. I could have... You just clean something up. And I woke up, it was like 2 Mondays ago, and I just felt this pit. And I, this is 6.5 years sober. And I woke up, and there were 5 places that I stole from. A while back, 5 places. And I woke up, and I came home from work, and I took a shower, and I, you know, put my sweats on, and I went to it. You know, and I went to, and I went into these places, and I went into these places where I stole from. And the beautiful thing about doing amends is the language changes over time. You know, the 9-step in our book is written so beautifully, and I'm able to look these people in the eye and say, I stole this, and how can I make it right? And just honest, and it was unbelievable. And I'll tell you, though, when I was in the parking lot of Ulta, I almost shit myself. Sorry for saying that. But I will tell you, I mean, it's like... You know, and I've learned, you know, in Alcoholics Anonymous, it's a human, I am beyond human power. And what that looks like for a girl like me is another sponsee isn't going to save me, isn't going to get me free. More information of this book and more big book studies and more speakers. I know speakers from this podium that aren't even sponsored, that don't, you know, things. So don't let this be anything but more of just my experience. That's it. But no human power can relieve my alcoholism. You know, you guys, I walk and, you know, I'm asleep thinking I'm awake, you know, and I thank God for the women around me that can wake me up, you know, and I'm one of those girls. I'm not going to hear and tell you, you know, it's not about a drink anymore. Not for me. I'll tell you, I had 5 years. I mean, I was so close to a drink, you know, so close, but I stayed honest. I got honest. I didn't leave Alcoholics Anonymous and stay away. I just got honest. You know, I got closer to my Creator. One of my favorite prayers that I thank God from the bottom of my heart that I know Him better. You know, it's one prayer I just say every day. And, you know, and so we get into this work because I'm, you know, I'm lying, cheating, I'm stealing. That's what I'm doing. Sober. I'm lying, cheating, I'm stealing. And, you know, I just get flatlined. It was just another surrender, guys. It's just another experience to share. You know, I meet tons of women. You know, my past is my greatest asset. I never would have thought that. You know, I'm a garden variety drunk. I never had huge, big white light experiences like Bill. But I love the dynamic and the magic and the intimacy that Bill talks about in his story. You know, it's, you know, the family afterward, I think, 133. I read shit so much, it's why I can quote it. Doesn't mean anything, but it talks about a deliberate manufacture of misery. And I do that. I bring it upon myself, you know, and I thank God for sponsors and women and sponsees to wake up and do this stuff together. So add that up to, you know, currently what's happening, guys. I mean, I'm the kind of girl, I'll wake up one morning and I have one little problem. Anybody wake up and they got a dilemma, or they wake up with resentment, or they wake up with this. By the end of the day, I'll be done with AA. Quitting AA, I'm done. Forget about it. I mean, that's extreme, right? That's extreme. That's why I have a 10-step to watch that. You know, Lily took me through these 12 steps, and I had other sponsors and really just guide me and sponsees. You know, I learned more from my sponsees than any other sponsor I ever had. It's unbelievable. And, you know, that's why I tell you, you know, her book says we get recovered. I am recovered from a hopeless condition or mind or body, and those are the facts. Those are absolute facts. And, you know, it's, you know, and lately it's, my cat, I had a little bit of a health scare, and it's just, it's, you know, it's amazing, guys, to have spiritual tools and to feel that excitement in your heart. You know, it's, everything was so big and dramatic and, you know, self-imposed, and it doesn't have to be like that anymore. You're supposed to get better, get happy, and get free, you know, and never have to shoot dope again or do crack cocaine again or alcohol or drink again. There's life beyond your wildest dreams, and that means if maybe you're new, maybe you're not new, but if you're alcoholic, like the book describes, and you take a little bit of action, you will be free, and that's the bottom line. Excuse you. You know, it's, you know, I thank God for this group. I love Feed First. I love seeing these, I mean, Sandy, and it's just, it's, and the faces, it's unbelievable. Alcoholics Anonymous is sacred. The announcement they made, awesome. Get in service. Join your home group. Get a sponsor. Get into work. Act your way into good thinking. I can't think my way into good acting. I can't call the shots anymore. My past proved it. When I don't treat my alcoholism, it proves it. I just can't call the shots. And once I get awake to that, man, the sky's the limit. The sky's absolutely the limit. So I want to thank you guys for having me tonight.